Hello, this is Janet Gallen welcoming you to Love Letters Live. Today's guest is a woman I just met as she walked in the door. It's Gloria Castaneda, and we already had a conversation about how to pronounce her last name.
Right.
I'm hoping we're going to get into that. And I just decided to turn it over to Gloria, and she said, okay, we'll talk about my life. I love that attitude. So go ahead. What do you have to say?
Well, thank you so much, Janet, for inviting me to do this.
And thank you for saying yes.
Surprise.
I told you, yes is my favorite word in the world.
My pleasure.
Go ahead.
I always love to talk about my life. I pretty much have an open book of my life. I was actually born in El Paso, Texas, but raised across the border in Juarez, Ciudad Juarez, Chihuahua.
Really? Why is that?
Because my mom lived there. My mom was working in El Paso
as a
nanny. And she met my dad, and that's a whole other story.
Okay.
But I ended up, when I was born, because they had a house in Juarez.
Yeah,
I was raised there until the age of six.
Was that nice?
And I don't remember. Well, as a child, it was nice.
Yeah.
Now
yeah.
I've been there lately, and it's not a pretty place.
Oh, okay.
But we moved out here to Los Angeles when I was 6 years old, and I grew up in Lincoln Heights. And went to school there, and went to Abraham Lincoln High School, and I graduated from there, went on to Mount St. Mary's College.
But what were your interests like as a girl?
I always wanted to be an actress.
You knew that.
I knew that.
That's what I'm asking. I had a feeling you were going to say that.
From the moment I can remember, acting was just
How did you know about it? What was your first sight of it?
I don't know. It was just movies and...
Oh, okay.
It was just a natural thing for me.
So you saw movies first.
Course, The Wizard of Oz. My all-time favorite movie.
Okay.
But as a kid in Lincoln Heights, I even put on a one-woman show in the backyard with a portable record player that my aunt gave me, and I had these 78-speed records,
uh-huh.
Peter Rabbit and Winchell Mahoney time, if anybody knows what the heck that is. And I put up curtains on the back over the clotheslines uh-huh. on the back. It was just crazy. And I charged the kids 5 cents to go see my show.
Good for you.
It was lip syncing before lip syncing ever.
Yes.
And I always knew that, but I didn't quite have the support from my mom because I guess she thought it was not a very good profession to go into.
Well, it's a lot of people say that musicians and writers. Parents want their children to be safe
mm-hmm.
and not have something that's a little iffy that maybe you do okay one week and you're starving the next.
That's true. That's
in all fairness to parents who feel that. I don't know if that was your mother's.
I guess, I think maybe she thought, things I would have to do to get to the top, if you know what I mean.
Well, that's a little icky too. Oh, yes.
So,
okay.
But of course, those things, I didn't even think about those things at that age. I don't know about kids now, but at that time, we didn't think about those things at that age. But... So what I did, she really wanted me to be a teacher. She always wanted to be a teacher. Then I'm her only daughter. I have three younger brothers, but I'm the eldest and the only girl.
Mm-hmm.
And she wanted me to be a teacher. She said, think about it. Be a teacher. You can travel during the summer. And I thought, okay, fine, whatever. But she kind of convinced me, or I convinced myself that I would probably be a good teacher. So when I graduated from high school, I applied at Mount St. Mary's College to be a preschool teacher. Oh, my gosh. I was horrible.
Oh, really? Not for you?
Horrible at it. And I came to...
That's an interesting point that you make because it's a talent. It's a particular ability. And people have, like acting or drawing or anything.
It is a particular ability.
How nice that you knew that it wasn't for you.
Well, I would see it with my peers there in school. All of the young ladies that were there at Mount St. Mary's, they were teachers. They would come up with these amazing ideas, and me, I would be pulling my hair trying to figure out a lesson plan. It was horrible. I was living with my aunt at the time. She was going through a divorce, and I was living with her. And one day, I was sitting there with all my books around me, child psychology, mm-hmm. all that stuff. And I just broke down and cried. I could not stop crying. And my aunt said, what's the matter with you?
Oh, you were trapped.
I'm like, she goes, all right, finish crying and we'll talk when you're finished crying. So I finally finished and she says, what's wrong? I go, I don't want to be a teacher. I'm terrible at this. She goes, well, what do you want to do? I said, I've always wanted to go into entertainment. Well, can you still do it? I said, I guess so. I could do it. She goes, well, do it. I go, what about mom? She goes, look, honey, I love my sister dearly, but who's going to live your life for you? You or your mother? And she goes, who's going to have to get up every morning and get dressed and drag themselves to the school and teach kids when you know that's not what your talent? She goes, you. So I said, you know what, Auntie, you're so right. Yeah. You're so right. So the next day, I went to my counselor. I said, I don't want to be a teacher. She goes, what do you want to do? I said, I want to finish here with my AA in liberal studies. Mm-hmm. And I want to apply to Loyola Marymount for their communication arts, mm-hmm. television production. She goes, do it.
That's what you did.
And so I did do it. And I applied to Loyola, I was accepted, and the rest is history.
So what is the history? What did you do after that?
Well, it's very interesting. But here's a funny thing. Okay. I left the acting behind. Oh, when I was in high school, I was in theater, and our teacher took only one other student and myself to see an agent out here in Studio City, by the way. I had never been to Studio City. I mean, that's not very far from, I didn't live very far from here, but he brought us to an agent, and I read for her, and she said to me, well, Gloria, I like the way you read, and I like your look. You're cute, but you have to weigh 105 pounds.
Oh, my.
I said, excuse me? I weighed at 129 at the time, and I thought, you know, I had lost a lot. I've always been a chubby kid, and at that time I was thin and all this. And I said, you know, it's taken me a lot to be 129 pounds. Just give me fat girls' parts. I don't care. I just want to act. And she said, oh, no, none of my girls are going to be pushed around and criticized by directors and producers. You have to weigh 105 pounds.
That's insane.
And I thought, okay, you can keep this. I'm going behind the scenes. So that's when I decided to go behind the scenes. Anyway, but the next thing was that I wanted to produce Catholic programs. That was my goal.
Now, what made you feel that?
I was very much into, I grew up as a Catholic, I still am, mm-hmm. and we found the Charismatic Renewal in the Catholic Church when I was 18. My mother found it, changed her whole life completely. Changed our life.
Can you take just a minute and say what that is for people? Because I don't know what that is.
Well, it's a more evangelical approach, more praising God, more singing, more praying over people, like evangelical churches. Mm-hmm. And that we didn't see that in the Catholic Church. You know, very different. And this all started in the 60s. And anyway, by the time I was 17, 18... it was getting very strong in the Catholic Church. So we ended up finding that, and it completely changed our lives. So I ended up volunteering with this certain group, this Hispanic group. It still is going strong in East Los Angeles. And I volunteered there during their conferences. I was an usher. And that's what I wanted to do, was produce Catholic programs.
Now, what did that mean? Like educational about Catholicism to reach people?
Is yes, that what, spirituality, all that. TBN.
No, I understand what you mean if you say that. So what did you do next then?
So, it was really funny when I was in Media 101, you know, at Loyola, mm-hmm. and there was a room full of kids there starting in the courses, and the teacher says, okay, how many of you want to be a director and all this stuff? And then I said, I want to produce Catholic programs. And everyone turned around and stared at me again. What's the matter with you? There's no money in that. I said, did I say anything about money? But everybody thought I was crazy. So anyway, I ended up graduating from there. And my first job was actually at Channel 2 as a production assistant in the public affairs area.
So you got a job right away. Good for you.
I was very, very, very fortunate, very, I should say, blessed. I interned with this wonderful gentleman, which I am going to say his name. His name is Alex Nogales, and he heads the National Hispanic Media Coalition.
Now, is that what he does?
That's
what still,
he does right now. He's a main person there. And he took me on as an intern. Amazing man, and he helped me learn and all that. So right out of college, when I graduated, he hired me as his production assistant. And here's the funny part. Before I graduated from college, there was actually a new Catholic station that was starting. It was a Heart of the Nation. And I applied. I said, I'm going to be graduating in a few months. I would like to work with you. Anyway, I never heard from them. So I started working with Alex. And 3 months into my job, I get a phone call from them saying, we want to hire you, but can you come so we can talk with you? I said, oh, look, you called me too late. I'm already working at Channel 2. I can't. Leave me alone. So I didn't talk to them. Then 2 months after that, they called me again. Please come over, Gloria. We want to hire you. This was for the Spanish program. They had a two-hour Spanish program, a daily program.
But it wasn't. It was Spanish and Catholic?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
And with the same Catholic network. And the rest of the day was English programming. Mm-hmm. So I went. It just so happened that the company was two blocks down the street on Sunset Boulevard from CBS. So I went, and I was mesmerized by the place, and it blew me away, and it was, you know, really nice, and the executive producer was really nice. So I went back to the office, and I talked to Alex, and I resigned.
Oh, he must have been so sad.
He was very not happy at all, and he said, he goes, Gloria, let's sit down, let's talk. He goes, you know what, Gloria, I know this is something you want to do, but this place just started. It could fold tomorrow. You have to give it time. You're very fortunate to have a job at CBS. You know how many people would like this job? I said, you know what, Alex? I live with my mom. I'm 23 years old. I don't pay rent. I'm very fortunate, spoiled, I guess you can say. I can risk this.
I like fortunate better.
Yeah. I can risk this. And I just have to do it. If I don't do it, I'm never going to be able to sleep for the rest of my life.
Good for you.
So he goes, okay. He goes, you have my blessing, you know.
And?
Good luck. I went. And I didn't like, right away I noticed that things were not what I thought they should be. And I asked for a meeting, about a month into my job, I asked for a meeting with the executive producer. And I asked him, I said, can you explain to me what we're doing here? Because what are you talking about, Gloria?
Can you say how it was different than you thought, or is that something that you don't
It was, because I was from a very strong spiritual background in Catholicism, and with the Charismatic Renewal, I felt that we really needed to give solid spiritual food to the public, and they asked for donations. So how can you ask for donations if you're not giving strong food? To me,
You were just an authentic angel.
No, I don't know.
This is wonderful.
Or very naive. Very naive. I just would go with my heart.
Good for you.
And I said, you know, I told him, I said, you know what? We're giving our community, we're giving them pablum. They don't need pablum. They need solid food. You know, this is what's wrong with our church right now is that we're not feeding our people. And so he's like staring at me like I'm crazy. He goes, but Gloria, we have to lure them in. I said, no. I said, the days of luring in are over. We have to give them food.
Well, you know, I think that's common across the board in lots of areas, and kind of an issue with me, that if you water things down enough and make it easy, then people will come. But they come for the real thing.
Yeah.
Is the truth.
Exactly.
Oh, goody. So what happened in this adventure?
So, 2 days later, I was fired.
Oh, ouch.
I was fired.
Oh, my.
Which was, everyone else all the other producers, they saw me when I went back to my desk after they laid me off, and I was packing my things. And
you know, you're smiling and laughing now, but was that devastating at the time? Or were you a little relieved or what?
I was shocked.
I bet.
I was shocked. And the producers go, what are you doing? I go, I just got fired. I go, what? You're the only one that cares a darn about anything in this place. Why are they firing you? I go, because I give a darn. Anyway, it's pretty funny now. But I left that place, and then I went back to the mission. Remember, I was a volunteer there?
Yes.
And I told them my situation, and they hired me right on the spot. So I became their media coordinator for 5.5 years.
Now, what mission is this?
Charisma and Missions.
It I see. The
Catholic missionary
system. Okay.
That's where our whole life changed. So I was there for 5.5 years.
So what did you do in that job? What did that entail?
I was in charge of videotaping all of the events, all of the conferences, all of the retreats. I ended up making copies of the tapes at the time with very, very primitive equipment, but it got done. worked very hard. I loved every minute of it. I was in heaven. You know, I didn't make any money. It was not a money-making thing, yeah. But I was in heaven. And to me, that was once some of the best times of my life happened those 5 years.
Oh, that's just wonderful to hear all this.
So I did get to do that. We were talking about producing Catholic shows. It didn't get to that point. After I left, they started producing Catholic shows. It was kind of interesting. But from there, I ended up getting married during that time. And then I left there. Mm-hmm. And I went on to actually produce Catholic programs.
Okay. How did that evolve?
Because Heart of the Nation, a week after I got laid off, my friends at the place, they come, Gloria, you're not going to believe what's happening here. What? This place is collapsing. It started folding. Everything folded.
After you left.
After I left. She goes, you're so lucky you're not here to see this. And I said, God just protected me from that. Uh-huh. So I was not there. It actually closed down. And then later on, 5.5 years later, it came back.
Now, you had taken a break for this long when you were first married? Is that what?
No, that's when I started. I was working at the mission. And 5 years after I met my husband and we got married.
Right.
And then half a year later, then I left and I went to produce the Catholic programs. I ended up getting a job at the new Heart of the Nation.
Oh, okay.
And then I was a producer there for 2 years. I was, and again, in heaven. And I did it.
What is it you look for? I've never met anybody who did this. So what is it when you start to produce a program? Can you just say what that process is for a minute?
Oh, my goodness. It's first of all, the program that I got hired to be associate producer on was called Search. It was a retreat type of program.
But is it conversations that you record, or is it a drama?
No, it's conversations. Uh-huh. It's teachings. Uh-huh. For instance, Search was, we had a host, which was Kathy Lennon from the Lennon Sisters. Amazing woman, beautiful woman. So she did the intros and what we call the wraparounds in between the segments. Then we had like a Bible teaching segment.
Okay.
Then we had a, a teaching segment where we'd have a priest or someone at a location. We'd go shoot a location and they would teach certain things.
Okay. So I guess
it was like that. And then we had another section where it was an in-studio participation with regular people from different parishes and priests talking about whatever subject. Oh, the teachings for that Sunday.
Okay.
So it was a combination. And then music, meditation type music. So I would do all the, what they call the offline. I don't know what they call it these days, but I would put the whole thing together with all the segments. And then the producer and I would write the script for in between. Mm-hmm. And then we have everything ready. When we shoot everything, then go to the edit bay and produce the whole show. And then, of course, get it ready to air. It was so much fun. I loved doing all that. So did that for 2 years. And then they ran out of money again.
Yeah.
So after that, I ended up getting hired at Channel 5 with a gentleman by the name of Nelson Davis. He produces a show called Making It, Minority Success Stories. It's a minority business show. It's been on for a long time. It's still on the air.
Oh, when is it on?
It's on Channel 5. I think it's on Sunday mornings at 6 a.m., I think. It's still on at that time, but I know it's still produced. And we interviewed minority business people, how they got started.
Yes.
We go on location and shoot this stuff.
Personal stories. Are so instructive.
Yeah, and there's always a story out there. And
that's right.
It's got to meet a lot of wonderful people that started their businesses. So that was really, really cool. I did that for 2 years.
So who are some of the businesses that you remember most strongly? And these are businesses in Los Angeles,
yes,
right, around here.
Yes. Like, for instance, this woman, Asian woman, that ended up being the owner of AAA Fence Company. They've been around for a long time, that, you know, you get your fences for your house or businesses. So we interviewed her. That was pretty interesting. Then we have Kim Chi Lee. He produces hot sauces. It's a huge, huge company. So we went to see them. There was another fun one. This company that produces, plastic moldings of food.
Uh-huh. Oh, like display models?
Display models, yeah. That was really cool.
For restaurants, so when
you
go
to restaurants, like the sushi and all.
Yes, of course.
It was really, we did that one. Oh, gosh, there's so many. Argas Tortilla Factory, which now closed, but that company started.
You know, it is amazing to me, just listening to you say this, when people there is always something to invent or to do or create or make into a business. I mean, sometimes you see, you know, even in the internet, some little girl had done some kind of very cute wallpapers for other children. And she made like $1 million on this. She was a kid.
I have something on on me.
What is that?
This is from a company called Origami Owl. Yes. This was started by a 16-year-old girl.
Okay, so let's just describe this. It's a beautiful pendant, and it looks like it's about the size of a quarter.
And you open it up.
Yes.
And inside are charms that you select
to
say a story.
Uh-huh.
For instance, I have my birthstone, which is diamond, April.
Yeah,
I have my husband's birthstone, my mother's birthstone. I have a little cross. You know, I have two hearts that say I love you. And what else is in there? I forget.
So anyway, it's a locket.
It's a locket.
Close it before you lose it.
And you create a little story with it.
Uh-huh.
This was invented by a little girl, 16-year-old girl. Her mother challenged her and said, the daughter wanted, I think, to buy a car or something. She goes, well, yeah, we'll come up with something to make your own money. So she came up with this. And then I think it's a Japanese company, found out about it and wanted to buy her out because it became very popular.
So I'm just wondering, you know, it's beautiful. I mean, it's an actual piece of jewelry, and it's surrounded by, you know, like a little diamond. And it's like a glass locket on a chain. And it's substantial. So I want, you know, just getting something like that manufactured is a little daunting.
I mean, my first piece that I bought was actually a bracelet. Not this, the one, but a bracelet with a locket. And I found this at another store for the same company. And I was like they're beautiful. They have different types of lockets.
Yes.
And I'm telling you, this company wanted to buy her out. She said, no, this will be a partnership. So this kid and the mom are tons of money. And these are like selling Avon or something like that. You have jewelry parties with this, or you can buy them individually online.
So the lesson here is from you and from all these people is let no one tell you no.
Exactly. Exactly. Never let anyone tell you no.
Now, so your mother is still with us?
Yes, she still is.
And
thank
is she
goodness,
just thrilled as can be with all that you've ended up doing?
Well, you know, it's interesting.
It's not teaching?
It's interesting. No, here's the interesting part. After I decided to go to Loyola, she was not happy, but she couldn't say much anymore. You know? So I did it. When I had my final project at Loyola, my graduation, my senior project, I invited her because we had to direct and to get the whole thing. And she sat there in the booth, and she finally understood what it was that excited me.
Yeah.
And she never said anything again. Now, the acting part, afterwards, I got hired by the state years later. I've been working for the state of California for the Employment Development Department for 18 years now. And I originally got hired to run a program called the Media Access Office. And I was working with people that have disabilities that are actors and want to be actors. I had no clue what it was about. It was the first time I ever heard anything of it. And anyway, I ended up starting work there. And it was a very small thing at that time, but I was very, very fortunate to have a woman by the name of Gail Williamson that was a volunteer with that program. She has a son with Down syndrome that started acting at the age of 11. And so when he started acting, and so she wanted to find a place or an organization that catered to actors with disabilities. The only thing of its kind that existed, she found, was Media Access. So she became involved with that. So when I came in, if it wasn't for Gail, I would have not learned everything that I learned so quickly about disabilities. And so we started working. In fact, today is her birthday.
Nice.
Today. So I did that for 18 years. But the thing is that my customers, it was like being a mom, really. I wasn't fortunate to have my own children. I wasn't ever able to have my own children. But Gail always said to me, he goes, you know why God didn't give you any kids?
So you could take these.
You're going to have 1,000 only children, that's why. And that's exactly how it felt. So they were the ones that encouraged me to go after what I always wanted to do, was acting.
So what acting did you do?
So I just happened I had a friend that also was going to be starting to take acting classes, and he invited me. And I went to take acting classes on my own and with this guy. And I went on, and I ended up getting an agent. And I've done a couple of commercials. I've done a little horror B-movie. So in other words, whenever I get to do that, it's like a little... Oh, I don't know. How can I say? It's just I'm
extra icing on the cake.
Yeah, extra icing on the cake. It just lets me get that out of my system,
or to use that talent.
Yes, and I love it. I love it. So I still go out on auditions. You know.
Oh, good for you. So this is a. I mean, you look very young. So when you're telling the story and it's over such a long period of time, I didn't realize that.
Oh, yeah. It's been, so, you know, with acting, you can be whatever age. It doesn't matter.
Right.
It doesn't matter. But that's what I've learned. And
just, oh, no, I just didn't realize you'd been at it for this long.
Yeah, it's been a long time.
So, ultimately, when you look back with all that you did with teaching Catholicism, I mean, you ended up teaching.
Yes. And now with the Employment Development Department, well, unfortunately, the program got closed 3 years ago, MediaActs, after 30 years of existing. But I work with the regular public right now, and I also give workshops. I give resume writing workshops, job search techniques workshops, interviewing skills workshops, and I get to do my acting there.
That's so great.
But it comes from the heart when I teach the customers.
Yes.
And my biggest satisfaction is when they leave with a smile on their face and say, thank you so much for giving us this information.
Well, it's clear that you are somebody who does everything lead from the heart. And your goal is really to make the world better. I mean, that's so clear.
Whatever it is that I can do.
Let me ask you something, since I am about love letters.
Uh-huh.
If you were to write a letter, do you ever write letters to people? Do you have a history of that? Or
I used to. You know, a new technology kind of has taken that away.
That's right.
I used to write love letters.
So if you were to write a love letter right now, or a letter, who would it be to?
Wow, that's a good question.
Because I can think of 12 people already in your life just from what you're saying. I'm thinking of your aunt. Is she still with us?
Oh, yes, she's still with us.
Have you ever written a letter to her?
You know, I haven't, because we take for granted that when we have our people around us.
Right.
There have been so many close people that have passed away recently.
Right. And that's what we say at Love Letters Live, is say what you feel while you still have the chance.
Yes. You know, my aunt sacrificed her life for us. My mom's a single parent. She was never able to marry my father. All four of us are from the same dad.
Uh-huh.
And so my aunt was the man of the house. And my aunt's 2 years younger than my mother, but she looks a lot older than my mother.
Oh, what a letter. What something for her to have in writing, in your handwriting.
But to thank her, because she didn't...
For all the things you just said.
Yeah. She just, you know, she... When I was born 2 days before her birthday. So I was like, she told me that, you know, Gloria, she says, we went through a lot when your mother was pregnant with you, but the day that you were born, our life changed. You don't know how much happiness came into our life, because we were the only two daughters, and my mother and my aunt also did not grow up with their father. That's another story. But my grandmother met a soldier when she was 16 years old. And during that time, you know, the parents would not allow their daughters to marry soldiers because of the crusades and all that stuff. Not the crusades, but the all that stuff that happened in Mexico, where the military killed a lot of priests and they burned churches and all that stuff because of the government at the time.
Yeah.
There's a movie that came out with Andy Garcia and Eva Longoria just recently.
What's it called?
What is it called?
Well, people can look up a movie, but it
tells a story. And so when my grandmother met my grandfather, my biological grandfather, he instantly fell in love with her and wanted to marry her, and he went to ask her for her hand in marriage. And my great-grandfather said, over my dead body, my daughter will marry a soldier. You know, I'd rather have her marry the last bum in this town.
Oh, my goodness.
Than to marry a soldier. And so... He went and he took my grandma.
Oh, okay.
So they had a horse.
So they ended up together.
They ended up together.
My goodness.
And because she was underage, she couldn't marry him without the permission.
Mm-hmm.
She ended up having my mother and then pregnant with my aunt. She ended up visiting her father, and they locked her up. And all this is in a script that I wrote. Doesn't everybody write a script?
Oh, good.
But anyway, so they were separate, and my mother, my grandmother had a stepmom at the time. My great grandfather married three times. He was a widower three times, and so my grandmother's stepmother, they locked her up, and my aunt ended up being born there. Mm-hmm. And when my aunt was 6 months old, they married my grandmother off to who was my grandfather afterwards. It's my mom and my aunt's stepdad. So, so they grew up without their dad, but grew up with a stepfather. Mm-hmm. And then, so when I was born, they had no other children. My grandma was never able to have children with my grandfather, my mom's stepdad. And so, she said, "You can't believe the happiness that you brought."
Oh, I'm so glad you've written a script.
You know, yeah.
Yes. So, so a letter to her just to say all that. There's something about having it on paper in handwriting.
Yeah.
And that she'll read that every week.
Yeah.
It's just proof, you know? Oh, I hope you do it.
I would say, you know, Tia, I'm sorry that I was born 2 days before your birthday, but you tell me that when I was born, it was a lot of happiness. And in fact, I always remember when you told me that I had to stay in the hospital because I dropped weight after I was born, and my mother went home crying that Easter Sunday without me in her arms, thinking that I was going to die. And you called the next day asking how was the baby, and they said, "You can come pick her up. She's gained her weight." And you went to pick me up, and you were only 20 years old or 21 years old without ever having carried a baby. And you picked me up at the hospital and went back in the bus, suffocating me almost. But you said you were like so in heaven with this little
so
baby.
That's wonderful to be able to start that letter at birth.
Yeah.
I mean, like the gratitude starts
there,
2 days old.
And then you went on working away in El Paso, and then said, "We have to have a better life than this." And you came to LA to look for a better life, and started working at that sweat factory.
Okay, so you include all those things, everything that you can remember, and that's just great.
Yeah,
and I'm sure you would believe this, but when people get letters like that, that's what they're holding. That's what's in the bedside table or tucked in the Bible till the day they die.
That's you know, this is wonderful, Jen. This is a sign that this is something that I have to do.
Okay. Oh, I'm
definitely
glad if you will.
Yeah, because my aunt right now, she's gone through a lot. She's going through a lot. She's been very depressed lately.
Oh, this will.
She's taking care of my grandmother. My grandmother will be 97 in 1 week. And it's a lot of work.
So she'll get some, you know, testimony here that her life made a huge difference.
Yeah, and it did.
And yes, and it's
good. To the whole family.
Right. So for her to know, you know what the gift really is, I think? When people get a letter like that, the gift is that you know it all, that you were paying attention, and that it sunk into your heart to stay there forever.
Yeah.
But you know, you don't want to just keep it in your heart. You want to share it out again, right?
Yes.
Oh, thank you so much for doing this with me. Meeting you has been such an uplifting pleasure. I am just going to be smiling for a week.
Likewise. You know,
thank you, dear.
I'm glad that we have people do this, because it also reminds us of these things that we forget, or they're tucked away in the back of our mind.
Yes.
You go, wow, I forgot all about that.
That's right. Oh, that's such a smart point. That is a huge thing in writing a letter, that one good memory leads to another, and you get to sit there for half an hour and bathe in nothing but positive.
Yes.
Oh, you're laughing. This is why I need a television moment, so people can see this expression. Well, thank you, honey.
Thank you.
Maybe someday you'll come back and tell another story.
Yes, I'll be happy to.
Like of your grandmother and that whole, I would love to hear that.
Yeah,
that sounds,
it gets very good.
Oh, okay. So I'm going to call you next time I'm here.
Sure.
And if you feel like sharing that,
I'll be more than happy to.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Jen.
Well, until next time, I just want to say, if you think you need to wait for a special occasion to write a love letter, writing a love letter is that special occasion. And all the love you feel in your heart, if you put it on paper and stamp it and mail it, you will make somebody else's life richer, in addition to the happiness you feel while you're doing it. Okay, thank you. So until next time, this is Janet Allen saying goodbye.